Thanks for joining me for Big Ideas. Hello, I'm Paul Barclay. For more than 50 years, the ABC's premier lecture series, The Boyers, has featured prominent Australians from all walks of life with their take on important themes and issues of the day. This year, 2016, the ABC Boyer lecturer is Professor Sir Michael Marmot, who grew up and trained in medicine in Sydney, but has spent most of his career at University College London. Marmot's research has led investigations into the social and economic determinants of health. He's titled his four-part lecture series, Fair Australia, Social Justice and the Health Gap. And we're going to hear the first two right now on Big Ideas. In front of a full house at the ABC's Eugene Goossens Hall in Sydney, here is epidemiologist Professor Sir Michael Marmot with the first in his Boyer lecture series. It's entitled Health Inequities and the Causes of the Causes.
What good does it do to treat people and send them back to the conditions that made them sick? Variations in the conditions that make people sick are in grim display in the US city of Baltimore. Such conditions do not lead only to ill health. In early 2015, Baltimore erupted. Civil unrest broke out. The precipitant of the riots was the killing of a black man in police custody, or should I say, one more killing of a black man by the police. But the underlying cause of the riot was inequality of social and economic conditions. As Martin Luther King said, a riot is the language of the unheard. I said Baltimore erupted, but it was one part of Baltimore, the poor inner city, that erupted, not the rest. I'd been studying health inequalities in Baltimore before there was civil unrest. In the poor part, where the riots broke out, life expectancy for men was 63 years. In the richest part, it was 83 years. A 20-year gap in one city. If you live in the richest part of Baltimore and you want to see what it's like to live where life expectancy is 63, you could fly to Ethiopia. Easier is to travel a short distance across town. Life expectancy for men in the poorest part of Baltimore is the same as Ethiopia, 2 years shorter than the Indian average. A link between riots and ill health is not unique to Baltimore. In summer 2011 in London, there were riots. They started in Tottenham in North London. Eerily, the precipitant was a killing of a black man by the police. As with Baltimore, the underlying cause was inequality. I'd been pointing to figures on health variations in London. For men, life expectancy in the most down-at-heel part of Tottenham was 17 years shorter than in the ritziest part of Kensington and Chelsea. No surprise that the riot should have broken out in Tottenham, not in Kensington and Chelsea. Why this link between ill health and crime? I don't think that ill health causes civil unrest, and I don't think that riots cause ill health, except in the obvious way of somebody being injured. No, I think the social conditions in which people are born, grow, live, work, and age are strongly determinant of both risk of ill health and likelihood of engaging in civil disorder. When the Tottenham riots broke out, a politician commented, "This is criminality, pure and simple." To paraphrase Oscar Wilde, the riots were not very pure and the causes were not simple. It was clear, though, that social deprivation was among the causes. The Guardian newspaper reported that of 1,000 rioters going through the courts, fewer than 9% had a job or were in training. 91% were not in employment, education or training, NEET, as we say in the jargon. Nationally at that time, the NEET figure was around 10%. A stark contrast, 91% of rioters not in employment, education or training, compared with 10% amongst non-rioters. There were no doctors, lawyers, accountants among the rioters, no plumbers, drivers, shop assistants among the rioters, but people who had little to lose and uncertain futures. The link between deprivation of social conditions, ill health and crime is all too obvious in Australia. The life expectancy gap between the Indigenous and non-Indigenous populations of Australia is about 11 years. It had been said to be 17 years. Whether it's actually got smaller or it's a change in the calculation method, either way, it's enormous. Australian Aboriginal men are 6 times more likely, and Aboriginal women 11 times more likely to die of ischemic heart disease than non-Indigenous men and women. The diabetes death rate is 19 times higher in Aboriginal men and 27 times higher in Aboriginal women than in the non-Indigenous population. Incarceration rates too fit with the pattern of ill health and crime clustering together. Aborigines make up 2.5% of Australia's population and 25% of the prison population. I've just described two phenomena that will be the subject of these lectures. The first, dramatic inequalities in health, is illustrated by the 17 and 20-year life expectancy gaps in London, Baltimore, and other cities, and the inequalities in health between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians. The second theme of the lectures is what I call the social determinants of health, the conditions in which people are born, grow, live, work, and age, and, I must add, inequities in power, money, and resources that give rise to inequities in the conditions of daily life. Health and inequalities in health are closely linked to the conditions in which we raise our children, the education we get, the neighborhoods in which we live, the work we do, whether we have the money to make ends meet, our social relationships, our care for the elderly. In short, all the things that matter to us day to day and in the arc of our lives influence health. And these conditions of life that matter to us are strongly influenced by the decisions that societies make and, indeed, global decisions that influence our social environment. At this point, you might be thinking, I'm interested in my health. All of us are. Why has he not mentioned smoking and drinking and staying fit? More, aren't inequalities in health the result of inequalities in access to medical care? Put bluntly, you might be thinking the poor probably don't look after themselves, and when inevitably they get sick, won't or can't get access to healthcare. On the first, lifestyle. Let me summarize by saying that smoking, drinking, unhealthy patterns of eating and exercising, and obesity are indeed causes of ill health. But we have to address causes of the causes. Why in Australia, as elsewhere, are smoking and obesity more common the lower one is in the social hierarchy? People with lower income and education are more likely to smoke, to be overweight, than people with more income and education. The causes of the causes are the social determinants of health, and they influence not only lifestyle, but stress at work and at home, the environment, housing, transport. Inequality in access to health care is not the cause of inequality in health. It's not lack of health care that causes someone to have a heart attack or develop cancer of the cervix. We know a great deal about the causes of those conditions and why they follow the social gradient. We need to address these causes to prevent disease from occurring. I'm going to make a grand claim. So close is the link between the nature of society and health that we can tell a great deal about how well a country meets the needs of its citizens, provides the conditions for them to lead flourishing lives, by the health status of its citizens. Even had I not spent decades of my life in Australia, I would know that it is a well-functioning society because life expectancy in Australia is near the top of the world rankings. I know that Australia is doing somewhat better than the USA as a society and much better than Russia simply by examining the health statistics. But I know something else. There are big inequalities in Australia that show up in big inequalities in health. They are most obvious between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people, but they also track along lines of education, social standing, and income in the non-Indigenous population. Evidence shows that we need action from government, federal, state, local, civil society, communities, and families. The welcome news is that the action I'm talking about would lead to less crime, a more cohesive society, and the opportunity for all of us to live healthy, flourishing lives. The first part of my grand claim is that the magnitude of health inequalities tells us a great deal about how well a society is functioning. The second part of my grand claim is that these inequalities are unjust. They are unjust precisely because we know what to do to put them right. Hence the title of these lectures, Fair Australia, Social Justice and the Health Gap. This all sounds rather social and political. How did I, a doctor and now president of the World Medical Association, find myself doing this? The trail of things began when I was a medical student at Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney. As I lay out in my book, The Health Gap, I was sitting in psychiatry outpatients when the next patient arrived. She looked the very picture of misery, her gait almost apologetic. She approached the doctor and sat down, huddling into the chair. The dreariness of the outpatient clinic, unloved and uncared for, couldn't have helped. Certainly, it did nothing for my mood. "When were you last time completely well?" asked the psychiatrist. Even in Australia, psychiatrists were supposed to have Middle European accents. "Oh, doctor," said the patient, "my husband's drinking again and beating me. My son's back in prison. My teenage daughter's pregnant, and I cry most days, have no energy, difficulty sleeping. I feel life is not worth living." It was hardly surprising she was depressed. The solution? The psychiatrist told the women to stop taking the blue pills and try these red pills and come back in 1 month. That's it. No more. To incredulous medical students, he explained that there was very little that he could do. The idea that she was suffering from red pill deficiency was not compelling. It seemed startlingly obvious that her depression was related to her life circumstances. The psychiatrist might have been correct that there was little he personally could do. I thought then, and I'm convinced now, that we should be paying attention to the causes of her depression. The question of who we should be explains why I discarded my flirtation with psychiatry and pursued a lifetime investigating the social causes of ill health and latterly advocating for action. More than 40 years of research and action on social determinants of health led to my publishing The Health Gap. After the launch of the book at UCL, University College London, I hopped into a black cab, clutching copies of my book. The cabbie asked, "Did you write that book? What's it about then, Gov?" The poor have worse health than other people, I told him. He started to laugh. Don't misunderstand me, he said. Don't take it amiss. Did you really need to publish a book saying that? Know what I mean? Challenged by the wisdom of the London cabbie, I told him about my Whitehall studies of British civil servants. Civil servants include neither the richest in society, no hedge fund managers, nor the poorest, no unemployed single mothers. Yet there is a remarkable gradient in health and life expectancy. The higher the grade of employment, the longer the life and the healthier the life. I label this the social gradient in health. He said, this is much more interesting than what I first thought. Know what I mean? I was also able to reassure him that this remarkable finding of a social gradient in health was not unique to civil servants. In Australia, for example, we see a clear gradient. The fewer the years of education, the higher the risk of death. Men and women in their 40s with fewer than 12 years of education have 70% higher mortality risk than the most educated. My taxi driver had no difficulty understanding that poor people had poor health, even if he got the explanation wrong. But the cabbie and the rest of us find it much more challenging to understand why people in the middle have worse health than those at the top. How do these gradients in health come about? We can start our search for explanation by looking at the extremes. To do that, let's return to Baltimore. Remember, men in the worst off part have life expectancy 63, men in the best off have life expectancy 83. I was attending a meeting at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, and a couple of young doctors kidnapped me. Come on, they said, we're going to show you Baltimore. We started in leafy Roland Park, where male life expectancy is 83. It was quite lovely. Trees, lawns, generous houses. We then went to Upton Druid, with life expectancy of 63. We saw streets where every second house has a diagonal red cross on the door. The cross means that the dwelling has been condemned as unfit for human habitation. If there's an emergency, the emergency services will not go in there. Can you imagine what it means to live in a street where every second house is deemed unfit for human habitation? We can add some detail. In 2010, median family income was $17,000 in Upton Druid, $90,000 in Roland Park. In Upton Druid, half are single parent families, 7% in Roland Park. In Upton Druid, 90% of the kids don't go to college. In Roland Park, 75% complete college. Wait for the next bit. In Upton Druid, one third of young people aged 10 to 17 are arrested each year for a juvenile disorder. One third each year. In Roland Park, it's not one third each year, but one in 50. Then there is the American disease, guns. In Upton Druid, over a four-year period, there were 100 non-fatal shootings per 10,000 residents and 40 homicides. In Roland Park, there were no non-fatal shootings and 4 homicides, one-tenth of the rate in Upton Druid. What these comparisons make clear is that we need to look at the whole of life from early childhood to older age and the life chances that differ so dramatically between areas, even within one city. A question I get asked in Australia, the UK, the US, and elsewhere flows from the London cabbie's response, and it is, why should I worry? The poor have poor health, but I'm not poor. It doesn't affect me. If you're of one political persuasion, you might think the poor have only themselves to blame. If of a different view, you may think the poor health for the poor is unfortunate and a mark of unfairness in society. Either way, you think, thank goodness, it's not me. The implication of the gradient is that it is you and it is me that are involved, all of us below the very top. We calculated in Britain, and the figures would not be very different in Australia, that the average person can expect 8 fewer years of healthy life than they would if they had the highest social position. 8 fewer years of healthy life means earlier onset of decline in grip strength, difficulty walking, cognitive decline, and of course, fewer years of life. The gradient involves all of us. We want to level up, flatten the health gradient upwards, have the health of everyone approach the good health of those at the top. I've used the word poor to describe the young man growing up in the Upton Druid area of Baltimore. A pause is in order. The median household income in that area was $17,000. Is that poor? The simple answer is that $17,000 a year is poor relative to Baltimore. It's really quite rich on a global scale. Yet it does not guarantee good health, shorter life expectancy than in India. Let's take a contrast from the Americas. Costa Rica, its average income per person is US$13,000, but it has considerably higher male life expectancy of 77. If you have little money and can't afford the basics, health will suffer. But in the case of the poor part of Baltimore, it's not just food and shelter. Individual income cannot buy family security, a secure environment, good schools with motivated fellow pupils, job opportunities. In other words, where health is concerned, it's not only how much money you have, but how much you have relative to the environment in which you find yourself. It's not so much what you have, but what you can do with what you have. Costa Ricans are much poorer on average than Americans, even allowing for differences in purchasing power. But their health is equivalent to the US average, male life expectancy of 77, and much better than that of poor Americans. This emphasizes two key themes of my lectures. First, health is a better measure of social progress than is national income. Second, we should be aiming to reduce the slope of the social gradient in health by leveling up, bringing the health of everyone up to a high level at the top of the social hierarchy. At first blush, you might have thought I want to achieve this by giving everyone the same income. That, of course, has never been done since humans stopped being hunter-gatherers and adopted more complex forms of social organization. Is it then possible to narrow the health gap? Evidence shows it is. We compared 15 European countries and looked at life expectancy at age 25. In each country, there was a gradient. The more years of education, the better the life expectancy. But there were big differences among countries. Sweden had the longest life expectancy for men at 25 and the narrowest gap between university-educated and those with basic education. Estonia and Hungary and the other former communist countries of Central and Eastern Europe had the shortest average and the biggest gap. The message is that health inequalities are not inevitable. The magnitude varies enormously, big in Hungary, small in Sweden, variable in Australia. What can we do? I will come to that in the lectures that follow. Let me anticipate, though, by saying that action will require greater equity of power, money, and resources. Greater equity? I've been told that I live in fantasy land. When Martin Luther King rose in Washington and declared, "I have a dream that on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood." What if instead he rose and said, I've been told I'm in fantasy land. We should accept the status quo and seek incremental change. There would never have been a Civil Rights Act. I say, come and join me in my fantasy land and let's seek a more just society.
Professor Sir Michael Marmot with the first in this year's Boyer Lecture Series, Fair Australia, Social Justice and the Health Gap, presented in front of a full house at the ABC's Eugene Goossens Hall. Michael Marmot is President of the World Medical Association and Director of the Institute of Health Equity at University College London.